You're listening to Solutions for Earth, a podcast dedicated to healing the world. I'm your host, Broderick, and today's guest is Kelly Krizak. And Kelly is the CEO and founder of New Earth Now, which is a regenerative development company. And she's worked on projects like the Venus Project and a number of other land-based, regeneratively built developments in Costa Rica and in other parts of the world. And this conversation is fascinating to me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Cool. So what's your journey and how did you get involved in regenerative development?
Yeah, so my journey, it's been quite an interesting one. I actually got my degree in business finance investments. And the reason I actually did that was because I really wanted to find a way for people to never have to worry about making money, so they could just make money off of the money that they had. And so I got really smart about how to use money and, you know, getting into stocks and finance and things like that. And then I transitioned out of finance and financial planning and got into real estate. And in real estate, I realized, you know, I could help people make money by training them on how to do real estate investments, wholesale deals, fix and flips, and eventually rental properties and Airbnbs and things of that nature. And so I basically did that for a few years and accomplished a lot of my goals in real estate doing fix and flips. And I had a team of over 200 people that I trained on real estate investments. We had a group of over 1,000 members that we were working with that was agents and investors. And so after I had done that for a little while, I was like, well, you know, we could do this for so long. And yes, people can make more and more money. But I realized quickly that no matter how much money you end up making, there's still so many problems in the world. And, you know, like pollution and waste of resources and homelessness and hunger and poverty and all of these things that I felt like we needed a solution for. And just doing, you know, real estate projects wasn't doing anything to solve any of those problems. And I actually got really inspired by the Venus Project, which is a documentary on YouTube called Paradise or Oblivion. And basically that showed me if we can build different types of futuristic cities in a way that creates a thriving environment by having efficient city design, having renewable energy, having our food provided for us, we could eventually go towards living in a resource-based economy. So rather than actually needing money to survive, you need resources and food and water and shelter and all of the things. And so when the Venus Project talks about this, I knew right away, I was like, wow, this is my true life mission, to release and liberate people from the need of money and all those constraints that it creates, and to actually be more in alignment with how we can live and thrive in harmony with nature and each other. And so then I started to research eco-village type of communities, seeing that there was like 100 communities in Costa Rica. I hopped on a flight and went to Costa Rica and started analyzing, you know, what's working and what's not in these different eco-village type of communities, really figuring out all the different types of regenerative systems, regenerative materials, co-governance models, all of these sorts of things, meeting some of the greatest minds in permaculture and a lot of these regenerative systems. And so, just taking that information and going to many different areas like Bali and Thailand, Australia, Mexico, just to visit these eco-villages and really start understanding this. And then I got a position as a sustainability consultant with a company called Verdani Partners, doing commercial real estate sustainability consulting. And so we were working with big companies like Howard Hughes, GID, Jamestown, in this environmental, social, and governance sustainability aspects, and really helping them reach certain certifications and improve their sustainability. And then I realized I wanted to start helping like more of the grassroots type of people that were wanting to start eco-villages and using my real estate and financial background with that project management skill sets that I had and actually start to transition to sustainability consulting for these large scale development projects on hundreds of acres of land, doing, you know, financial modeling, development planning, assessments and project management. So I've been doing that for quite some time now. And now we've actually created our own development project called Abundancia. And we are looking at several different pieces of land and have some of the most amazing land partnership opportunities in the world with some of the best developers in Costa Rica and eco-village developers. And so that is where we're at now.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really awesome. And I'm so interested to hear all about like the, you know, those unique topics in between. And I'm curious about like what you see, like the transition to a world without money. Like that's one, kind of maybe one of the ones I want to pick out right now, but like what that looks like, because it's almost hard to imagine that.
Yeah, definitely. It is. It's a far out thing. It's not going to happen in the near future, because in order for us to be able to really do that, we have to have the whole world transition to that, because then we can actually trade resources freely and all the things. But basically, temporarily, we can create communities that serve that example to share, you know, how we actually can regenerate the land and regenerate the income as well through different models that we've been sort of experimenting with and see, you know, can we actually create a world that is resource-based economy and use cryptocurrency to kind of transition to that eventual model and be able to get off of money completely. But right now it's very difficult to even imagine a world that doesn't have money, because it's, you know, basically it's like an intermediary exchange. But once we have all the resources that we need, we have food, we have water, we have shelter, and people are just working from their hearts and just doing things because they're passionate. Another really key factor is having automation, technology and robotics to do things that support menial tasks that we have to do today, which is, you know, labor intensive things or just repetitive tasks. And using robotics to be able to help with a lot of that stuff, give humans the ability to be creative and innovative and explore what their passions and their purpose are, and having a really good education system that focuses on solving world problems or, you know, helps people transition to that way of life. So I see it as a definite incremental process that will eventually get there, hopefully.
Yeah, you spelled that out really well, like the cryptocurrency being sort of an intermediary, which is just another form of money, but it's much more, I don't know how to word it, like smooth. It's almost like, it's faster. It's faster. Okay. So let's walk through some of the, like the development projects you've worked on, like maybe more specifically, and then like what your favorite things were about them.
Sure. So one of the favorite ones that I've had so far that I've worked on was this project on about 550 acres in Costa Rica that basically had all of the architectural designs based off of the sacred geometry of the crystal spiral, which is sort of like the Fibonacci spiral, but a little bit different geometry. And it's absolutely beautiful the way that they've taken this geometry and creating like Merkabas and beautiful bamboo structures that integrate sacred geometry, working with one of the best bamboo architects in the world called Arquitectura Mixta. And they've just developed this incredible spa, and it's going to have the most amazing healing technology. And they're working with high level scientists and physicists in the area to really help people understand these different modalities. And that it's just such a beautiful property. And the intention there is really to elevate people to this 5D consciousness way of living and have these structures emanate those vibrations. And another one is this 430-acre project in Costa Rica as well, that's in such a beautiful location. And they are using like really artistic designs, like a bunch of different, from many different cultures around the world. They'll have like a hammam, tea bathhouse type of thing, a theme for their hotel. And they're going to have just some of the best bamboo architects as well, using like Pablo Luna and Ibuku, and sort of having a flavor of Azulik and Tulum, which is, you know, built with these beautiful natural materials made in architectural designs. And then they're also going to be having immersive art experiences. The person who's running it, you know, has been doing festivals and immersive art and immersive food type of experiences. And so they have this model that's using those, and then also having like a village of villages. So they have other people who want to create villages within their village. So it's just a bunch of amazing collaborative artistic designs. So those are a couple of my favorite ones, and they both happen to be in Costa Rica because they're some of the most recent ones. And I also got to learn a ton from those projects in Costa Rican development and permitting. And so that's kind of why we chose Costa Rica to do our eco village too.
Wow, that's amazing. That's incredible. And I love hearing the one, the healing technologies. I would love to learn more about that if you have more to say about that. And two, just the, like the, what's not the Fibonacci sequence, sacred geometry, but the other one.
The crystal spiral.
Crystal spiral. Okay, I have to learn about that. But yeah, if you have anything more to say about the healing technologies, I'm all ears.
Sure. So we're actually working with some a company called Quantum Energy Science, Quantium. It's spelled a little bit different. And it is some of the best healing technologies, such as scalar frequency machines. There's things that are light healing beds that can help people, cure people of things like cancer, physical injuries even, and like PEMF frequency machines, ozone therapy. I mean, there's tons of different modalities out there, but really using these frequency machines to be able to help clear all the energy out and raise the frequency of our bodies, because cancer literally can't survive when we're in a different frequency state. And of course, that has a lot to do with our mentality and eating and all of these things. And so the healing centers that we're going to be building are really recommending people, you know, to heal by food, mentality, diet, exercise, ancient Chinese herbal medicines that are all natural and things of that nature. And then of course, for the more serious stuff, there would be the frequency healing machines. And, you know, if we don't want to say that we're all against Western medicine, if there's a need for that, that we can't, you know, do, then that's definitely an opportunity. But really just seeing how much we can really cure and heal ourselves through just food and frequency and natural medicines.
That's incredible. And that's really incredible. And I'm on about that. So I'm curious, how much does that cut out the doctor? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you still need, you know, to have your basic tests done. So one of the things is like testing for your nutrient levels and your, what hormone sensitivity or food sensitivities you have, hormone levels, different aspects of what's in your blood. And then that can really determine if you're low on certain vitamins or you have certain hormones out of balance or those sorts of things. And those recommendations can be based on those. And microbiome testing is another thing to understand, you know, how healthy our gut bacteria is. And so when they do these tests, then we can get more proper recommendations. So there's still going to be need for like nutritionists and doctors, but it's not going to be like your normal doctor today that just kind of prescribes you some sort of pharmaceutical drug. So it'll be a different type of doctor.
Wow. Yeah. That's so awesome to hear that that's like all happening. I'm glad we're having this conversation. Yeah. So what makes it development, and we kind of touched on this, but regenerative, and like, what are the standards?
Yeah. So there's quite a lot that goes into it. I mean, the first thing I can think of is making sure that you're not harming the environment in any way, basically leaving a better ecological footprint than when you left it. Obviously, sustainable is you kind of keep it at the same level and it can sustain itself. But regenerative is really like taking old cattle farming land, for example, or agricultural land that has been previously degraded by chemicals or fertilizers or different aspects, you know, clearing the land. Basically, what we do to regenerate it is only build in cleared areas so that you're not cutting down trees and you're actually being able to regenerate all the areas that you don't build and preserve at least 90 to 95% of the land that you're on so that nobody else can, you know, purchase that and eventually develop it. But you have all these nature trails, so people end up living immersed in nature, which also helps in wellness and a lot of other, you know, things for social connection, and regenerating it by having actual regenerative systems in place that recycle the water through the house. So gray water systems, you know, basically use the water, and then they use the same water used to wash your hands for the toilet. And then the toilet goes out into the land that's then, you know, filtered into different pieces. You can either use a biodigester to actually reuse the fuel from the waste and have that be put back into the house, and then the water goes out to filters out into the garden. And so that's just one of the types of regenerative systems for water. Also having rainwater collection systems and utilizing water in a very efficient way, low flow faucets, things like that. And then energy systems like solar. Now they're having things like zero point energy and magnetic energy coming out, which is basically what Nikola Tesla was doing back, you know, over 100 years ago or so. And I mean, that's kind of still being formed, but eventually more of that stuff will be out there. And that's true regenerative energy. I mean, basically it just lasts forever, and you don't have to use rare earth materials like you do with a lot of the solar panels. I recently even heard about some solar panels that are made from vegetable waste. So new inventions are coming out all the time. It's really incredible. And then, of course, waste systems to have like a zero waste environment. So we're not using plastics. And if we do need to use plastic in something, we actually put it into a pyrolysis machine that turns it back into fuel. And then that then can be used for things like cooking or even gas for your car. Eventually, we want to go totally gas free and use and plastic free and just use only recycled plastic, and then, you know, have that be used for fuel, or, you know, go and use only electric vehicles. So there will be like a lot of electric vehicle kind of ride share opportunities in these types of villages, and electric shuttle buses for transportation. And so basically just making sure that we're being carbon neutral at a minimum, but carbon sequestration is actually even more important at this time, to make sure that we're sequestering carbon from the atmosphere. We're utilizing renewable energy. We're being self-sufficient, growing our own food, so we don't have to have that transported and trucked in, you know, which may take some changes in some diets, but really it's much more natural and healthy for you. And you can't ever, but most likely won't be 100% food self-sufficient in most places, but making sure where you get it is local or organic, and it's not harming the environment anyway. And basically taking the entire life cycle of all the materials, building materials that you're using into consideration. So making sure they come from a place that's not hurting the environment in any way. It's ethical, you know, it's not like slave labor or something is creating those materials, and then knowing where they're going, how long they're going to be lasting, if they're going to be not lasting that long, are they compostable back into the environment? You know, do they have any chemicals in it? Really thinking about the materials that you use in a holistic perspective. There's so many different types of regenerative building materials out there now. One of my favorite is rammed earth, is incredible because it lasts a very long time. It's absolutely beautiful. It has great thermal mass, insulation, and you can use it from just creating a pond, basically digging out the dirt right next to the house and building by pressing down the dirt. And it lasts, you know, potentially 500 or more years. So it's a really sustainable way to build, and there's so much more amazing materials like that. But yeah, basically there's a lot of different factors that go into regenerative development, and it's so much more than that. Yeah. But that's what I can think of off the top.
Yeah, you definitely covered a lot of bases there. My question is, like, a lot of this is going down in Costa Rica, and it sounds like, you know, there's a lot of that going on there, but like in the United States, you know what I mean? As like being one of like the top, honestly, probably polluters in the world. And how much, from your knowledge, is like this all kind of like permeating throughout the United States? You know what I mean? Because it seems like it would be such a culture and paradigm shift for all of this to be happening right now in most of the states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I wish there was more being done, and there is little bits being done here and there. For example, in California, I know that they require solar to be put on all new housing development now, because they understand, you know, that we need to be capturing renewable energy and not using coal and oil and all this old energy that's creating CO2. And so that's great to see that things are, you know, starting to get implemented into the U.S. for these sorts of regulations. Another thing is new permitting being done for different types of sustainable housing, such as hempcrete, straw bale housing. I don't know exactly everything that's approved, but they're starting to approve more and more as we go. And yeah, like the transition to all of these electric vehicles is really helping as well, with all these car companies coming out with an electric version, and giving, you know, carpool lane access to electric vehicles. So I'm definitely seeing a lot of little improvements, and I'm hoping that eventually they're just going to, instead of putting money towards the military, eventually they'll be able to put the money towards creating more sustainable and regenerative infrastructure for all the development happening.
For everybody. Yeah, that's going to happen. I believe it. Okay. What are the co-governance models you've seen that work well in these villages? This is a really interesting one.
Yeah. Sociocracy is one that's used quite often. I took a 10-week course with Diana Leaf Christian, who's one of the best sociocracy training experts out there. She wrote the book on creating a life together. And another book as well that has to do with creating eco-villages. And it's more than just co-governance. Her books are just incredible. I recommend that for anyone getting into this lifestyle. But basically, I've seen it work with different villages. Emerald Village in California actually uses sociocracy with the different, there's seven different families that live in that village, and they all have, you know, meetings, make decisions together, and, you know, you have to come to a certain consensus or a majority vote that's agreed upon. And, you know, the only thing that I've seen that's really hard with sociocracy is you have to go to so many meetings and hear everybody out. And sometimes you need, you know, conflict resolution strategies such as nonviolent communication, which really helps. But yeah, it's a lot of energy, and time that people need to put in to be able to create these co-governance models. So we're actually working with some many different groups that are helping with the technology to be utilized to do co-governance models, but be more efficient. And so you can actually create proposals, make decisions together, vote, and everything on a platform online. So we can have some sort of proposal come out for an idea. People can vote on that idea. And then, you know, a decision can be made based on different sociocracy principles. And there's a lot more to sociocracy, but you know, one of the companies that I've seen actually do really well with this is called Haifa. And they have, instead of having a decentralized autonomous organization, it's called a decentralized human organization, DHO. And they have developed this software for that they're using currently right now to be able to make proposals and vote and have roles and responsibilities within the group and have different positions. And you can even get paid from that model through the system. And so they're working on a way to be able to duplicate that and be able to share that with other communities that are being built. And eventually we're going to come up with software that's going to be so customizable to each different community and the way they want to govern themselves. But that's kind of what I've seen out there. Holacracy is another one that is being utilized, that I've seen that more for businesses than for communities. But one of the key factors is having each person be able to share their role and write their own roles and responsibilities so that they can take full responsibility for their position. And they feel like, you know, they're a leader in it rather than it being a top-down structure. And so they can make their own decisions about that role. And that's another thing with these co-governance models. Instead of being top-down, they're really like circular, you know, from the mission or the vision at the center with all these different departments and circles and ways of interacting between them.
Well, yeah, I really love that. I think the future is, at least everything that I've heard, is like more, it's much more circular. Mm-hmm. Like even the buildings, as you obviously know. What's aircrete? I've heard of a lot of the building materials, but I haven't heard of aircrete, and then also bioceramic and algae.
Yeah.
That's also another one.
Yeah. So aircrete is basically mixing soap with concrete. And so the concrete is like 10 times lighter, and you have to use 10 times less concrete. It's lighter, and you can create these really nice structures for a pretty affordable price. And one of the things, though, is that it's still using concrete, which usually isn't so good for the environment. So at least it's using less, though. So it is a more sustainable, eco-friendly option for sure. The bioceramic.
Soap,
yeah.
Interesting. How does that, like, it binds the, it's a binding material?
It is, and it basically creates little bubbles within the concrete, so then the concrete can expand, but it's still solid.
Interesting.
Yeah, super interesting stuff.
And the water doesn't do anything to it?
The water, like
when it's like rain or whatever.
You know, it's more breathable. I know that, but I think that it's a smaller hole. So I don't think that it would get through the structure so much, but yeah, that's a good question. bioceramic material is an incredible thing. There's basically like a magnesium oxide or magnesium phosphate type of material in that. And I don't know the exact science of it, but it's basically can be stronger than concrete. It seems like it's a bit more expensive right now, but the really cool thing about magnesium is that you can actually protect from EMF frequencies by putting magnesium oxide into the building materials, and it kind of creates crystallized formations. So that's a great material for wanting to protect from EMF. So people who are sensitive to EMFs, they can even like spray a thin layer on the inside or the outside of their home and be protected, or they can even mix the powder with the building materials or the paint surrounding it. But it's very cool, new age, strong material, and hopefully it gets a bit cheaper to build with. But for now, in places like Costa Rica, you don't need a huge thick piece, you know, for insulation. So you can use it pretty readily.
Nice. Yeah.
And then algae is really cool in multiple ways. I mean, it could be used for many different things, not just building materials, like biofuel and many things. And basically, you know, it can be turned into anything like plastics, paints, carpet, I mean, cosmetics. It's a pretty magical material. I don't know how the science works again, but basically you can put it as well with building materials to sequester carbon. So sometimes if you put like algae on over buildings, like that can actually be a carbon sequestering building because it has algae on it. So if we just did that in all the cities, you know, we'd probably reduce a ton of pollution, which is incredible. And you can even use some types of algae like seaweed, or you can call it sargassum, for building materials as well, creating like blocks with it. And a lot of that has been coming up in the ocean recently because of potential over-fertilization, CO2, whatever it might be. It's been coming up on the beaches, especially in places like Tulum, and they need to something to do with it. So you could either use it for composting or you could use it for building materials. It's pretty awesome stuff.
Wow. You know, as you talk about this, it just sounds like it's really simple. Like, you know what I mean? Like really simple to like change the world. It's like everything's right there. It's just a matter of incorporating it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to be here for, is really putting out the message that, hey, if we could teach everybody to build like this, like the world could be changed instantly. You know, if all the builders and developers changed their ways of doing things, it would be amazing.
Yeah, New Earth now. Okay, so how do you incorporate sacred geometry? We kind of touched on this, but sacred geometry into your design.
Yeah, so you can use that in the architectural design of the buildings. Obviously, you can do site design, depending on the topography of the land, but creating kind of different ways of putting the buildings on the land in places that align with sacred geometry. You can even create beautiful mandala gardens or sacred geometric labyrinths or shapes in your permaculture and your agriculture. You could use it in artwork, you know, just for beauty. You can also use it in like house structures, making the structure be like a Fibonacci spiral or something of that nature. And there's so many amazing ways. I've actually seen with Architecture Mixta, one of their models created a toroidal field, so it was like, you know, kind of like a donut type of shape, but you know, a column in the middle. And when you're in it, you feel like you're not even in a building. You just feel like you're outside. And so it creates this like bioharmonic energy within the body, which is really interesting to actually, when you actually feel it, because you can hear about, oh yeah, it like changes your energetics and all this stuff. But then when you're in it, you're like, whoa, I feel really good. I don't feel like I'm just in a square box, you know, because there's no right angles in nature that we know of. And so using more curvature, and especially when you're in alignment with sacred geometry, you're basically more in harmony with the universal energy.
I love that. That's really awesome. Okay, so abundancia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's centered around Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which, you know, he coined the term human potential. And so this is a question I actually asked Justin too, but like the ability for everybody to self-actualize, is that like in your world, is that like a possibility? Possible.
Yeah, that's exactly what we are doing this for. You know, basically, we have drawn out how the needs, the Maslow hierarchy of needs, are being met with each of the bottom layers through this type of living. So all your basic needs are met, your food, water, your shelter, everything provided for free with our specific model, Abundancia. We do this by actually having the public spaces, the commercial leases, and the rental units pay for the operating costs of the community, so that people can just be liberated of these survival needs and be free to actually do what they love every day and create and have an amazing education center and co-working space and maker space where people can create art or come to work together to do business ventures that make the world a better place, or, you know, just learn research things that could solve major world problems. And so when you, you know, meet people's basic needs, and then the next one is the need for safety and security, you know, people feel really safe in a community that's like-minded, that's, you know, meeting their needs of security and having a safe space to be. And then belongingness, you know, when you have these like-minded people and you're all here for a similar value and vision, and you bring people into that vision, and they feel like this sense of connection with others, this feeling of love and belongingness. And then the next one, what's the next layer after that?
So basic needs, safety, belonging, and then there's one more, and then there's self-actualization.
Yeah, sense of accomplishment. That's what it is. So they can feel like they're accomplishing things because just by living there, by contributing, they're regenerating the land. They're, you know, living in alignment with their values. And some of the ways that we do that too is by having these things, a zero waste grocery store, a sustainable and ethical retail store, so that when they're buying their goods, they're not feeling bad for purchasing plastic or inorganic products, because that might be all they have available to them, you know, in the previous place of living. It's really hard to live in alignment with your values in modern day society. So they feel like a sense of accomplishment for even just living there, on top of maybe whatever they're creating in their life. And then basically self-actualization is next. And really that's creating that sense where they can like really meditate with themselves and have time for creativity and self-expression. And, you know, that's what we're all really meant to be doing. That's kind of the Venus Project's model as well, is, you know, what would you be doing in your life if you were completely just in this creative mode and you were just super passionate about it and you were doing it because you loved it, not because you were just going to make money at it. And so that gives everybody the space to really feel what is best for them. And we also have, you know, places to come heal at the healing center, or have retreats that could be awakening for you. And so that's, a lot of these practices are happening now so that people can really reach that self-actualization. But a lot of times what happens is they'll go to this retreat or this thing, and then they'll go back to their old lives, you know, in the US or wherever it is, and just kind of be doing the same thing. And then they have to like go back and do another retreat to have that awakening again, and to remember like, what are they really here for? And eventually people will move to what they're really passionate about. And honestly, I think the pandemic really helped with people realizing, you know, what their true passions are, because they got to, you know, work from home or get some more time off and really understand what is it that I really want to be doing with my life, and take a step back and really think about it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I also want to say that, like, how much you kind of talked about it, how people will go to a retreat and then they'll go back to like the States, for instance, and kind of return. And it's like, how can you, you know what I mean? Like, how can you, the way I'm like imagining it in my mind is like, we're like trying to break a mold that the United States is, right? By allowing everybody to become who they are. That's what I'm thinking right now. And it's so entrenched, like the culture, and there's also like a lot of subcultures in the United States, but that's where my mind's at. It's like how to get everybody into alignment with who they are. And like that, you're basically talking about a model that does that. But bringing it to the States, because the States has like the most like power and influence over the entire world. You know what I mean? So if you can do it here, then the entire world changes. That's just kind of where my mind's at. But anyways, do you have anything to say to that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, just seeing, you know, we're not just doing this in Costa Rica just to try and get away from the US, but really to, because it's,
yeah,
the model's already created here. The permitting is it's rigorous, but it's less strict as far as being able to build full communities, because you have the mixed use opportunity here where it's harder to find that type of land in the US. So it's been harder for people to build these types of places in the US, but as the permitting and as the regulations, you know, start to adapt to this new way of living, the US is already starting to permeate with a lot of these different types of eco-villages and sustainable building as well. So I definitely am optimistic, yeah, about the future. And I feel like, yeah, same, eventually, you know, it will permeate the US. It's just, it's a harder thing right now, but it's a matter of time.
Just a matter of time. Yeah. So how are people financing these projects? And you actually kind of touched on it a minute ago, but you talked about like a difference between community, like co-governance and like business models. But you know, maybe like the distinction there and then like the investment models,
yeah,
involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's many, many ways. There's a lot, yeah, of people that are pooling, you know, their funds. Instead of just buying one home for themselves, they say, hey, who wants to build a community? Let's get together and let's pool some funds to be able to purchase this land together and all of this. There's also, you know, private kind of real estate type of investors that, if you make it a financially feasible financial model to show them, you know, they can get returns and everything, then that's, you know, kind of a traditional way of doing it. But there's some incredible creative ways as well. Or, you know, there's millionaires and billionaires all over the place that share this vision that they want to see, yeah, the world in this new light, in a new way of living, to create an example for so many others. And so I see them, you know, purchasing land or work like funding these types of community projects. Some creative ways that I'm thinking is using NFTs. And I'm actually pretty new to NFTs. I mean, of course, we've been all hearing about it, but like, how does that actually work? You know, and so they're starting to be able to tokenize real estate, such as homes, land, access to things, you know, even some things like rental units. You can actually purchase an NFT and that NFT represents the home or the access or whatever that might be. And that's a really cool way to get around a lot of the legalities. We're not really doing things like that way yet because it's so new and untested that we're like, you know, maybe just, yeah, using NFTs for a membership or something that, you know, isn't as legal as purchasing a home deed. But I see that's the way it's starting to happen because everything can be tracked on the blockchain. You can have a physical representative of what you purchased. It's a really cool way to start raising funding through NFTs and, you know, just giving utilities of, you know, how they can use that NFT. Or other, you know, crypto funds that are producing annual revenue, annual ROI, and then some of that can, yeah, be used to project finance these regenerative community projects. And I've even heard of some specific funds that are meant for regenerative eco-community type of projects as well that are raising, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars right now to invest in these types of projects. So there's many different ways of doing it.
Lots,
yeah,
of options.
You could either, yeah, go the traditional model, the crypto way, or the, you know, somewhere in between. But yeah, it's pretty, yeah, vast.
That's incredible. Wow. You're like very tapped in. It's awesome. Okay. So how do cryptocurrency and other forms of finance play a role in the creation? You kind of just talked about it, but maybe because it's there, if you wanted to expand on it just a
bit. Sure. Yeah. So with the cryptocurrency, one of the ways that it will be integrated with these eco-villages is them having their own utility tokens. They can even do securities tokens too, if that's the direction they want to do. But usually utility tokens is better because then it's more stable and they can, you know, use things in the community, purchase things in the community with these tokens. So it's kind of already happening around the world with people creating their own tokens and using these. An example of a eco village that's using their own money is Dominhur, but they're not using crypto. They're using just, you know, kind of one of their own more physical types of currencies. And but it would be a similar kind of way of doing things. You know, if you basically have your money and then you transfer it to this token. This token can then get you access to these things. And if many different types of eco villages around the world start to create their own tokens, eventually we can kind of get off of the fiat system, because if you can have everything be paid in these crypto tokens, you can kind of be released from the stronghold of the financial system and inter-exchange these tokens with other communities and create your own economy, which feels a lot more secure than really having unknown, like whether the community or whether the economy is going to crash and your dollar is not going to be worth much anymore. Who knows, you know, what may happen, you know, probably nothing, but we always have these fears of the economic currency crashing and everything coming down and us losing all of our money out of our bank accounts or, you know, whatever the fears may be. Sure. I don't know if that any of that would happen, but just having something where you don't have to worry about that, where you have this innate value in these tokens that can be exchanged with other eco villages. So you can have the freedom to travel and experience these lifestyles all over the world.
Wow, that's amazing. I just had like an image of like all, like a map of the globe, and each of the little areas has its own, like, I mean, this is already true. Every country kind of has its own currency, but it'd be almost even more specific to like certain little villages. And yeah, it's a really interesting thought. How do they like if you're going from, let's say we're like 30 years into the future and there's like way more of these and you're going from one village to another. All you have is currency from one village, but you want to do things in another village. Well, how would that work?
Yeah, they're currently creating like exchanges for those different tokens. And there's something called seeds, which is basically like a new type of financial system that they've built.
Yeah.
Where you can actually, the eventual goal, it's not fully done yet, but is to have different types of currencies be exchanged on this platform or transferred to the seeds. And those seeds can be exchanged for other types of tokens in other eco villages, or the eco village just may say, I want to use seeds for my token. And, you know, then we're all kind of going off of a similar model. And that currently seeds right now is at like maybe 8 cents or so, and it's set to go up to $1, and then when it gets to $1, it kind of just stays so that it becomes a stable currency. So it's kind of like what, you know, the cryptocurrency eco village land will be backed on these seeds is kind of how I see it. And seeds is all about regenerative money, regenerating the land, only working with companies that are in alignment with the values that we have too.
Wow. I love that. It's incredible. Okay, last question. What does regeneration mean to you beyond the standard definition?
Yeah, so seeing the world as fully regenerated to me is to actually see there as no like major world problems, you know, like especially when it comes to ecological issues such as pollution and waste of resources, but really regenerating our whole lives, like our whole type of environment, that our mindset, regenerating, you know, the way that we connect with people, the way that we're living in society, to a kind of a way that we've maybe never done before, but has really been done in the past in the ancient cultures where they lived from the land and they took care of it. They were stewards of it, listened to the land, And actually, like, you know, there was carbon being sequestered in a natural balance to the earth, you know, because right now we're producing way more carbon dioxide and the ozone is thinning and natural disasters are happening and climate change is happening. And so true regeneration, instead of that happening, it would be a natural balance where we would have, you know, just the right amount of carbon in the air for the plants to be able to soak in and for us to be able to breathe a greater amount of oxygen and truly to live in harmony with the planet and with each other and, you know, creating this just more natural, happier, more joyful way of being and to see, you know, no more hunger happening because, you know, one of my deep dreams is that eventually these places that are have disease and hunger and poverty and a lot of these major issues can learn to build their own communities with full resources for their own food. So they're not reliant on money anymore, but they're just educating their kids on how to build their homes and creating their own societies and their own lifestyles and not being controlled by any outside force that's just trying to impose any sort of thing on them, but seeing them flourish, basically regenerating their whole environment, their whole lifestyle, and creating their own communities in their culture that works for them, not trying to change them for them to adapt to what we think that they should have. And so I think that's true. Yeah. Regeneration is, you know, not just the ecological standpoint, but the human aspect too.
Yeah, it's all connected. That's amazing. Yeah. Kelly, you are a wealth of knowledge and you're definitely tapped into a frequency that I think more people could like tap into. And I think that is kind of like part of the answer. And you definitely paint a light for the world. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That's my hope in the world is that this inspires others to take action on their dreams, how they can make the world a better place. And, you know, if this is of interest to them, to just do it, just go for it, because it's the way the world's transitioning, we're all evolving, and just to hop on the train as soon as they can.
Hop on the train, alrighty. Awesome, thank you so much, Kelly. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you too, you as well.
As always, thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I hope this conversation leaves you with, a profound sense of hope for the world, as it did for me. And I think Kelly's spelled it out really well. So with that, sending you all so much love.